Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:17 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 3rd. I realize that some people have had difficulty accessing the website yesterday. I've been in contact with our IT people and that has been solved. If you're still seeing April 1st, just click on Next Day button here and you will be taken to the second. And once I post the website, then you just need to refresh the page and it'll come up with the third. Now, moving along, I think that what we're seeing in here today is a really quite impressive move by the resources sector. Nickel prices, for example, were up 25 cents and are firming from the region of the trend mean. Copper has lagged somewhat over the course of the last few sessions, but it was in positive territory in here today. Well, this is on the back of a really quite impressive move that we've seen in China. I think this is a good chart from the perspective of a teaching example, because we have a very clear example of an upside Q reversal, and that checked the decline back in October, and we had very clear upside follow-through. That really was the beginning of the bottoming process. Then we had another upside Q reversal at the beginning of January, and really the market hasn't looked back since. And we've had a very clear breakout from this 1 month range over the last three sessions. Well, that really does shout out that the Chinese market is back on an expansionary footing. Bull markets in China are state sponsored. So where is the state sponsorship? Well, they've been very clear in terms of trying to contain the shadow banking sector over the course of the last few years, and that job is done. Then at the end of the party congress 2 weeks ago, they said that on the one hand they want to treat private and public, or I guess state-owned companies, in the same fashion, and that they are ordering the banks to make more money available. Well, this being China, we have to consider that a lot of the money that is going to be made available is going to flow into infrastructure and housing development, and that's commodity intensive. So there's a clear potential that we're going to see a demand boom in terms of the outlook for the resources sector. And what we've certainly seen has been an uptick in demand for mining shares. So the ASX 300 resources index in Australia was up in really quite dynamic manner in here today, and that has completed that little range that it put in over the course of the last month. And this is a very clear resumption of the medium term uptrend. While it's not as evident on the ASX 300 resources index, when we look at the FTSE 350 mining index, there is incredible symmetry between the range put in between 2013 and 14, the V-shaped bottom in 2015 and 16, the range then put in between 17 and 18, and now the upward break. Well, if this is to remain reasonably symmetrical, then it's not at all unreasonable to think that we're going to see the 25,000 point level retested or exceeded this year. So this is a clear breakout from what is effectively a 7-year range. And that's an explosion waiting to happen, I think would probably be the best way of thinking about it. So that's certainly something that is going to be gaining the attention of investors. Well, when we look at some of the investment trusts that are tracking these types of shares, like the BlackRock World Mining Trust, it has lagged, but it is looking better in here. I think part of the reason for that is because of what it holds. Well, BHP and Rio are both doing rather well, but Vale has been lagging, and those three shares together represent 38%, just about 38% of the entire index. Then we have, let's take a quick look at Vale. I know for a fact that both Rio and BHP have broken out in here today, but Vale, as a result of the, not only do we have a new right-wing populist government, but then they have a clear anti-corruption bias, and one has to question how efficacious the permissioning and environmental standards that have been imposed on companies like Vale and other Brazilian companies were when you could bribe your way out of anything over the course of the last few decades. That does represent a really quite a significant threat to Vale, but it's beneficial to just about everyone else. Well, Glencore has got significant it's got significant coal, and I don't know why that's not working. Let me just try that a different way. When we think about the outlook for the company, though, it's got coal and it's got cobalt. Cobalt prices are rock bottom right now, and Glencore is starting to turn around. Well, it's also, of course, if it's got cobalt, then it's also got copper and nickel, and both those prices are starting to turn. What I find particularly interesting is that having had this rollicking bull market for much of the last few years, cobalt now has crashed lower, going from 95,000 to 30 over the course of the last 8 months. But it is now at the upper side of the underlying range, and this is about where we can anticipate that support should start to be coming back in. It's not as if people are going to stop manufacturing batteries, and it's not as if cobalt has been excised from the demand cycle, but that we definitely had some bubbly activity back in late 2017 and early 2018, and that has now been cut out of the market. Well, of course, the other market where we had very clear bubbly activity was in Bitcoin, and prices there were up an additional $400 in here today, so now cruising through 5,000. There is certainly this is a very volatile market, and this is the most substantial bullish move we've seen in really quite some time. Well, all of the bubbly activity put in the last few months of 2017 have also been excised from the market. But here we have a bullish catalyst in the form of the CBOE removing the Bitcoin futures. The bubbly activity at the end of 2017 was in response to people pricing in the potential for the market to ratchet higher as leverage was introduced. So lots of people put in their positions ahead of that event. Well, the upshot was that when the futures were introduced, what most people used them for was hedging their long positions, so you had a big short and it crashed the market. That's really quite similar to what happened in terms of portfolio insurance and the 1987 crash. Well, now that they're removing that futures contract from the market, that removes leverage from the market, and it suggests that there is potential here for the market to start moving higher. Now, Fidelity is starting to think about and is certainly on the cusp of launching an investment product. One of the biggest concerns that institutions have had with investing in cryptocurrencies has been custody, with so many examples of the crypto exchanges being hacked and vast sums of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies going missing. Institutions needed to have someone pick up the tab if that were to happen to theirs. So they need a custody solution, and it does look like we're going to see that, whether that is going to be in the form of ETFs permissioned by the SEC or Fidelity beginning to offer them. Then if you can solve for custody, then there are substantial reasons why institutions might want to invest in Bitcoin, not least, or if not Bitcoin, then some of the other cryptocurrencies. I do think that there are better ones out there, but this is obviously the big one. And if we think about what factor investing, And the fact that people are looking for diversified assets, well, Bitcoin is a diversified asset. So there is a clear reason why some institutions at least might want to have some. And I think that is the primary reason behind the move that we've had. It is now back above the trend mean on each of the occasions in the downtrend that it has pushed above the trend mean. It's failed. So the minimum requirement, having had this nice move on the upside now, is to sustain a move above the trend mean. If it can do that, well, then the lows are in. I think that's one of the most important characteristics. Now, one of the other, I think, really interesting charts right now, and that is not the one I want. So let me go back and find that. When I look at the outlook for platinum and palladium, what we're presented with is a ratio which is back at the lows that we haven't seen since 2001. One of the things that I remember quite clearly from the very early stages of the commodity bull market back in the early 2000s was that platinum and palladium are interchangeable in petrol cars, but that platinum is primarily used in diesel cars. Well, obviously, the decline in demand and supply of diesel cars has been deleterious to the platinum price. And on a relative basis today, palladium is extremely expensive, and it is almost an when this ratio is at 0.5, it means that palladium prices are double the price of platinum. So we know what happened last time. There is a clear argument for why auto manufacturers should be retooling and preferring platinum over palladium. And if that's the case, then if we look at the individual contracts, well, we're presented with platinum, which is coming up towards the upper side of an evolving base formation, and it was up about $20 in here today, but it is firming from the $800 area. And on a it doesn't matter how you cut it, platinum is cheap today, particularly relative to gold. Even if you account for the fact that platinum is sold at 95% purity and gold at 18% in jewelry, and that platinum is denser, so you need more of it to create something the same size as gold, it's still cheaper than gold. And that's an extraordinary set of circumstances. Definitely, if one is buying jewelry today, then one should be getting a discount on the platinum price. It's obviously not going to happen considering jeweler margins, but that is the reality that is presented by the relative prices of the metals. And gold prices in here today were down a tad. They continue to pause here around the $1,290 area and the region of the trend mean. This is obviously a key level where it would really be ideal if prices were to start to stabilize again. But so far, we haven't had the clear upward dynamics to confirm a return to demand dominance. When we think about the fact that the resources sector is definitely starting to attract interest once more, then the continuous commodity index is bouncing from the 400 area, and that is being led higher by the precious metals and the industrial resources. And we are seeing some spotty action coming through in terms of the soft commodities. So soybeans, for example, has started to firm from the lower side of the range, but it's certainly not particularly convincing yet that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Orange juice wasn't able to hold its rally posted yesterday and was in negative territory in here today. Arabica coffee has been ranging below the dollar area for much of the last few months. It was in positive territory in here today, and there is a short-term oversold condition. If it can follow through on the upside tomorrow, then we'll have broken the downtrend, particularly over the last 2 months. that would at least hold out the prospect that we could get it back above a dollar, and then we could start talking about a failed downside break. So there is certainly potentially some action starting to come through in terms of the commodity markets and commodity-related currencies as well. The fact that Australia's government surplus ha or Australia's government has returned to surplus was positive for the Aussie dollar in here. It's still got a lot of work in order to really demonstrate a return to demand dominance, but if the commodity cycle is turning back in favor of higher prices, well, then that is likely to be beneficial. The oil price today was relatively steady, and it's pausing around the 70 area. Well, it paused above 60 and it paused above 65. So there is the prospect we're going to see a pause somewhere around $70. I continue to think that as long as it doesn't pull back by about $7, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. So this continues to represent a reasonably bullish phenomenon. And if prices are sustained for the next few months, well, then on a year-over-year basis, that should start to look better for the outlook for the major energy producers. On the other hand, natural gas producers are not getting a great incentive to increase supply. We've had a very substantial contraction from the spike higher back in November, and now prices are coming back down towards the lower side of this evolving 3-year range. But we have had occasions over the course of the last decade where prices have spiked down to below $2. And that's where we get supply destruction. So that's obviously a potential outcome for natural gas, and most particularly if we start to get either warmer weather coming through or indeed a milder summer. There obviously is a very clear potential that the lower side of this range may not hold, but obviously we would need to see a move below 250 in order to demonstrate that support is indeed failing. Well, with Chinese markets doing better, then that is beneficial for the wider global economy. And what we have seen now is that the S&P 500 was just about in positive territory in here today. I think we do need to bear in mind that we're right in the region of the peak from back in January. So this is an area where we can anticipate some pause in consolidation. And the trend has become more choppy over the course of the last 2 months, where upside breaks didn't quite hold in March, but then rebounded quickly. So there is a prospect now that we could get an additional pause in consolidation below the 2900 point level, considering that is around where the peak was in September. That's also a big Rubicon for a lot of people because they'll have been looking at their statements. They'll have seen how much the market went down through to December, and they're pretty much back now to where they would have been if we hadn't had that decline. So we could start to see some people asking, "So what's next?" And then some people will start to think about taking some profits off the table, while others will start to think about a further advance. What I find interesting here is Amazon continues to march higher, and Jefferies came out today and said that their target over the next 12 months is $3,000. Now that's a substantial, that's a very bullish argument, and that also would rhyme with the way that people have been trading in Amazon, that people have been buying the dips in Amazon for just about the entire decade, and reactions of about 30% have represented the clearest buying opportunities. Well, this reaction was of 35%, so it was somewhat larger than the others, but the price is starting to push back up towards that 2000 level. Obviously, 2000 is a big psychological level in much the same way that 1000 was a big psychological level in 2017. And if it breaks through that level, well, I don't think it's inconceivable that people will start to think about, well, where's the next area of potential resistance? And the number that would immediately jump to mind would either be 2,500 or 3,000. So there is some logic in terms of behaviorism to think why the price could get there. And of course, if one were buying today, then that is exactly what one would have to believe in order to justify the purchase, particularly following the big reaction that we had. So that's also part of the behavioral inputs that are going into the kind of market environment that we have right now. Then when we look at the Nasdaq, well, Nasdaq is almost now back up to the peak posted in September. And it pulled back very violently from that peak the last time. It is now back above the 7,500 point level. And again, this is an area where everybody knows what happened last time. So I don't think it's beyond the bounds of possibility at all that we now get some consolidation. That it would be really unusual if the market were to just continue to break higher from here. What I also I think is rather relevant is if we go back and think about what it looked like in 2012. Well, back in 2012, we had a very impressive rebound off of the lows put in at the end of, and I don't know why that's. Hold on a second. I can't talk and chew gum apparently. If we simply just zoom in on what happened in 2012 and 13, then we had a substantial pullback in 2012. Then, in the last few days of the year, the market broke the sequence of higher reaction lows. But then people came back in on the 1st of January and they started bidding the market up. And it had a wobble in the early part of of April. Then it was able to push all the way back up again into the other half of the year. When we then look at the kind of action that we had in 2012, we had a very similar move. It had a big move on the upside, and then it rallied all the way through until the end of at the end of the first quarter. Then we had a substantial pullback, and the market was able to recover. Well, we have to pay attention to the fact that we're at the end of the first quarter, and there is a tendency for markets to underperform between May and September. And we're in the region of a previous peak. So I think it is quite likely we're going to get a more choppy environment over the course of the next few months, that there is the potential for a lengthier pause, that then the question will be whether we're going to see the market start to break higher again in coming months. I think considering just how much the market has rallied, then that has to be at least a partial consideration that we are in the region of previous peaks, and there is a reason why some people might want to take some money off the table. And what happens in terms of the bond market is probably going to be a big consideration, considering that we've had a meaningful move in yields, and that is unwinding. The overextension relative to the trend mean, the yield is coming back up towards the lower side of that overhead trading range, and that will be the first area of potential resistance for the yield. When we look at the futures prices, then it's a very similar story. We've had a substantial breakout, and now we're getting some pause and consolidation. The first area of potential support is going to be somewhere around 122.5. So there is potential that the bond bull market, that are I guess the rally in bonds, probably a better way to put it, that began at the end of last year can persist. and until it sustains a move below the trend mean, then the likelihood is that the bond market will continue to conclude that the next meaningful move in rates is going to be downwards. If we continue to see stock markets doing better, well then that is going to challenge the bond markets hypothesis. What is also, I think, rather relevant is that the 210 spread generally moves into negative territory a few months, maybe 6 months after the 3 month and 10 year spread. So then the clock would start counting in terms of the outlook for the economy. I rather think that there is a clear potential that there is going to be a progressive revolution within the Democratic Party, and that they're going to be putting up a someone who is not just going to tax and spend, but is going to tax a lot and spend a lot. And that has the potential to scare the markets 18 months out from here. So it's not at all unlikely that we're going to have some difficulty in the markets at some point in 2020. But more short term, I think there is a clear reason for some consolidation to come through from Wall Street. But when we look at Asia in particular, and the fact that it is being led higher by, and I didn't type in the correct, what is that? Oh, that's an interesting, if this is an EGX gross return index, that is environmental and social goods, and it would appear to be doing rather well. I'm going to have to look up that index for tomorrow, but the Eurostoxx index has rather impressively bounced from the region of the trend mean. The DAX index is closing in on the lower side of the overhead trading range, and it's within striking distance of the psychological 12,000 level, which represents an area of resistance. What is also interesting is that Greece has been approved for some debt relief and will get 1 billion euros in debt relief, and that is rather positive for the Greek market, and it was in positive territory again in here today, and it has clearly broken the downtrend evident for all of 2018. There was an article in Bloomberg today talking about depopulation in the Spanish countryside, and that there are whole hamlets for sale for less than 100,000 euro if one is willing to make the necessary upgrades to the buildings. But that is really a testament to the fact that even so long after the credit crisis, that availability of credit on the periphery of Europe has continued to be constrained. But what's interesting about the IBEX in Spain is that it has put in a process of support building over the course of the last 7 years. There is a sequence of higher reaction lows evident since 2012, and now it's bouncing once more. Well, 12,000 is a big level considering that it has failed to push above it, or I guess even 11,000 over the course of the last decade. But it does look like this is a process of accumulation. And the euro was a little steadier in here today, having bounced from the region of 112. It wasn't quite able to hold all of the advance. Well, there is no way that Europe can raise rates, considering the depth of the depression that is continued to be evident in a substantial number of the peripheral countries. They can't tolerate higher interest rates. They need a weaker currency, and I do think that that is what we're going to get. There's a really strong likelihood that we're going to get additional monetary accommodation. It hasn't happened yet, but the measure of the total assets on the major central bank balance sheets has begun to pause, but it needs to start pushing back above the 20 trillion level. If it can do that, well, then we're very clearly back on a global reflation trade. I certainly think that there is a strong likelihood that that will occur, considering the quantity of fiscal and monetary stimulus that is quite likely to flow back into the economy. But this is an important measure, and it has been contracting for just about all of this year. Part of the reason for that has been because of the strength of the dollar. And the fact that the dollar is strong is an inhibiting factor for continued outperformance of the emerging markets. If the dollar were to break upwards in a dynamic manner from this range, well, then that would be a rather significant challenge. Meanwhile, we have elections coming up in India, and the index was in negative territory in here today, so it does look like we're going to get some consolidation in the region of the previous peak. We have an election coming up in Indonesia, and the market there continues to consolidate. And of course, there's also an election coming up in Australia, and that market, boosted by the resources sector, is coming back up towards the peaks put in 2018. Then, of course, the big question is, are we going to get an election in the UK? And the FTSE 250 index is also firming in here. So there is, I think, scope here for markets outside of the USA to outperform, particularly if the dollar doesn't rally in a dynamic manner. The likelihood is that the US is going to continue to grow strongly, and it is likely to be led higher by the large cap growth companies. So we do have to then pay attention to the potential that we are in the third psychological perception stage of this market, and there is the potential for a bubble to form. The fact that resources are turning back to outperformance is a clear indication that we are late in the cycle. The Russell 2000 index has been lagging, and it is above the trend mean, but I think it is going to be the one to pay particular attention to, considering that it is chock full of companies that are leveraged to the domestic economy, and it has a large number of those that have become really quite leveraged with debt with extraordinarily low levels. That has been a good part of the reason why we've had such a rollicking performance by small caps over the course of the last decade. So I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.